Is the cost of education eating away at your family budget, by choice or otherwise? Did you know that private school fees are increasing at a greater rate than inflation or wages? Tertiary study is likely to cost more too. The government hasn't announced the final details, of course, but there's the prospect of a fee hike for university with an inflated HEX debt. So what might be your strategy if you're a parent with a very particular vision for your children's education, tertiary, secondary? What are the options for saving for that education? Personal finance journalist Beena Brown joins us at this time for Everyday Economics. She's a contributor to the Australian Financial Review's Smart Money section. Welcome back, Beena.
Thank you, Natasha.
What sorts of education costs are we talking about? What scale? Because clearly this all depends on the choices you make.
Absolutely. Look, when it comes to independent or private schooling, you know, they're big figures. And obviously they're the bigger, the more years you want to send your child there. But, you know, roughly, I suppose, if we're looking at a $20,000 a year school from kindergarten to year 12, then over those years, you know, parents could face a bill of somewhere in the vicinity of $450,000 just for one child, which is, you know, not inconsiderable.
That's one way of describing it. This notion that also school fees are increasing at a greater rate than inflation or wages for those who elect to go to independent or private schools.
What that really says is that you need to have some strategy, I think, in place as to what you're prepared to pay, what you can afford. Very few people would say they've got the money to pay for, you know, just, you know, out of their pocket for those sorts of fees for children, particularly if they've got one more than one child. So, they've thought about it. They've thought about whether they want their children to go to that sort of schooling for all of those years. There's no doubt that there is a skew towards, you know, private schooling in the final years of school, and people are now really reconsidering whether or not they'd like to pay for, you know, university fees instead, because they're not going to be inconsiderable either. You know, we're talking 40 to 100,000 depending on the degree and an institution.
Peter Martin has made that point too, that parents might elect to not spend the money on secondary education, because the evidence is mixed there about the benefits of picking a private school over a public school in terms of education outcomes, and put the money into a tertiary education support instead.
That's right. I mean, it will be very much up to, you know, individual families as to what type of schooling, you know, they think of is important, and when, what stage of a child's life. A lot of people put emphasis on those early learning years. They might send them to a public, you know, system for the primary years and then come back to private for later.
Okay, so mapping out a savings strategy, you're making the case that it's a good idea.
Look, I think when you're talking those sorts of figures, you know, it is a good idea. Saving anything after tax is hard, and so you need some sort of strategy, you know, prior planning.
Where do we start then?
Well, there are a couple of options. There's the, you know, good old savings accounts, I suppose. You know, that requires a sort of a certain amount of discipline. If you're going to put money in a savings account, you probably want it in one where you can't touch the money. At these sorts of rates, you know, you'll likely be eaten away by inflation. So really you're probably talking at sort of slightly more sophisticated investment choices, such as insurance bonds, managed funds. You might put together a share portfolio. All of those come with an element of risk, but, the returns are of the sort that you're going to need to stay ahead of inflation and get some sort of capital growth going.
Let's consider insurance bonds then.
Yeah, look, they're specifically designed for people who are looking for at least a 10-year investment, the benefit being that there's no tax paid if you hold that investment for more than 10 years. And so how they work is that you might start one with a fixed amount and then make a regular contribution. And that some of them start for as much as, you know, $1,000 a month and then regular contributions of $100. You know, just as a rough figure, if you started when a child was two and saved $7,000 a year, then you could end up, depending on how the money is invested, with $100,000 by the time they start secondary school.
And $7,000 a year, though, is a big savings for a lot of households, isn't it? But I guess this is about building on those savings.
Absolutely,
I'm thinking this would be a good idea not just for those who have children, but for those who want to save for anything. This
absolutely.
Is a conversation relevant to everybody's lives.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, it's just all ways of, I guess, quarantining money for a purpose. You know, it's all too easy to put money into an account and then go, oh, wow, let's go on a holiday. You know, that looks good. This is purely about, you know, paying for what is going to be, you know, a major expense. And, you know, of course, you know, there are plenty of people out there with no children who will also have things that they, you know, want to save for.
Indeed. So that the insurance bonds would be a good option if you can lock the money away for 10 years to get that tax benefit. Now, there are a number of education savings plans that get marketed by different operators. Does something distinguish those from all the other generic options you have for saving money and building, growing your money, so to speak?
Yes, I mean, they're recognised by the tax office as education savings plans. And they're similar to the insurance bond. They're sort of managed fund type investments where people make regular contributions. And if the money is directed to education, so it could be fees or uniforms, books, and in some cases accommodation expenses, then the ATO will, the tax office will refund all the tax paid on the fund. So there's sort of this tax advantage, I suppose.
Ah, and there are a number of different products there, and obviously we won't mention them, but are there key things that differentiate between them?
The things to look out for are whether or not you can stop those funds. So I suppose if circumstances change and your child doesn't look like they're going to go on to university, if that's what you're saving for, then in some cases you may or not may get your money back.
Wow.
In other ones, you know, the money has to be spent on education for education purposes. Otherwise, it reverts back to a different type of saving strategy, possibly without the same tax benefits.
Mm, okay, so you've got to watch out for those and know that you can bail if you want to, I guess, depending
That's
on
right.
what your needs and
yeah.
desires are.
Yeah.
So they differ in that they are given a particular tax status by the government.
Is that the
main difference between those purpose-built education savings funds compared with standard savings accounts?
That's right. The tax office recognises them as savings plans for education, and so gives those companies that run them, you know, tax refunds or tax benefits, I suppose, which are then passed on to the investors.
Okay. So another point that you make is throwing your money into your mortgage, but using the redraw facility of that mortgage when you have education expenses.
That's right. I mean, you know, the mortgage is one that people are very good at paying off, and paying off more if they can, particularly while interest rates are so low. Mm. And so how that would work is you would put as much money as you can into an offset account. That's obviously, you know, reducing the interest cost of your mortgage. And when the time comes to draw down on pay school fees, you would draw down on that mortgage. The downside of that is that at the end of those school years, you're going to have a bigger mortgage. So, you know, you need to have some strategy in place or some, at least be cognizant of the fact that you're going to have a larger mortgage at some point,
mm.
Unless you keep up, you know, higher payments, you know, along with the school fees. But it's not a bad way to, I guess, quarantine money, again, for school fees. You know, the rate of return is you know, better than putting it in money in the bank, and you're paying less interest on your tax. You also don't get taxed on the money that you're putting in there. It's not a bad tax-effective way to save.
What about family trusts? Is this a way that some people pay for education if they're lucky enough to have a family trust?
That's right. I mean, this is a very specific, I guess, you know, family setup, but how a family trust works is that the money, there'll be money in there that's being invested. It'll be generating some earnings, and those earnings are distributed in a tax-effective way. So you might distribute that money to the lowest tax-paying member of your family, and those earnings will be used to pay the school fees. So it's all about tax savings there.
Mm, okay. And then some organisations offer salary sacrifice options for funding education. Do many do that? And how do they work?
Look, I don't think it's a widespread option, but education costs are one of a few items, along with cars and super and computers.
Laptops, yeah. Childcare, rent. I mean, you know, most organisations don't have a very comprehensive array of salary sack options, though, do they?
No, I don't think they're widespread, but, you know, certainly some of the, you know, big companies would offer some sort of salary sacrifice options to some of their employees, and education just happens to be one of those ones that can be salary packaged. It's usually more effective for people on the high income, in the high income bracket, and it's, you know, arrangement between you and your employer where you pay for some items straight from your pre-tax salary. So again, it's a sort of a tax saving strategy. You know, it reduces your taxable income.
Okay, for those though who don't have a lot of money, what do you but have certain aspirations about funding their children's education, and education's getting much more expensive, as we know. What do you think might be the best option to consider? And obviously, you're not a personal finance advisor, but just, you know, where should they really look to first?
Start with, you know, any sort of saving strategy. I mean, even if it's a savings account, as basic as that, or a term deposit, put that money away. Obviously, the earlier you can start, the better, because you get the power of compounding. So a small amount in the early years and contributed to over, you know, over a long term, will have an enormous compounding effect.
So that's $50 a month, maybe, as a start.
Look, it's just huge compared to trying to find that money all in one lump sum at the last minute. I mean, so even if it's a basic savings account, and these are particularly good if you don't, you know, if you're not thinking 10 years and you don't want to lock your money away, obviously, but look for a high interest paying one that perhaps rewards making deposits, you know, and you get sort of some sort of penalisation or less interest if you start withdrawing that money, so that, you know, you're not tempted to just, you know, take it out and go on a holiday.
Well, I might do that.
That's right. Well, maybe, look, a lot of people, you know, get some really good holidays.
I think you remember your holidays often more than your school experiences. Let's face it, which is more educational sometimes. No, I shouldn't say that. I take that back. Beena Brown, thank you so much for joining us on Life Matters again this morning for Everyday Economics.
Thank you, Natasha.
Beena Brown, personal finance writer and contributor to the Australian Financial Review's Smart Money section. And that's Everyday Economics for this week. It's an issue that weighs down a lot of parents today, doesn't it? But actually, for a different perspective, we've received this tweet, which really gets to the heart of Gough's legacy and questioning about whether we should be paying for education at all. Thurza has tweeted, pretty disappointing, Life Matters, that the topic today is about saving for private tuition one day after Gough's death. And we like your frank feedback, so thank you. You can tweet us at RN Life Matters. Let it rip, folks. Let it rip.